This is Inside Open Wheel with your host, Jeremy Scott.
From the TrackHound Multimedia Studios just outside of Chicago, this is Inside Open Wheel. Hello, everybody. I'm Jeremy Scott. Who would have thought that halfway to Christmas in December, we would have so much news to cover that this is going to be about as long, if not longer, than last week's episode. I'll have Charlie Ante with me here shortly to discuss the news of the week and have our usual running commentary. After that, Rod Reed of Force Indy Race Team joins us. They're going to be the new team in USF 2000 next year, and we'll talk about how a discussion with Roger Penske led to where we're at today with the new team. Also, our favorite Canadian, Steve Wittich and Rob Howden, will be joining us for our Road to Indy wrap-up. There were two series this year in the Road to Indy. However, it was still action-packed. As always, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Search for Inside Open Wheel. InsideOpenWheel at gmail.com. That is the best place to email your questions to. Have any questions? Leave us a voicemail at 815-914-9260. But we start off today's show with some big news out of one of the series we cover. It's Formula Race Promotions. And Monday, I should say, we had a big announcement. It was kind of teased on Thursday. And it was that F4 cars are going to be eligible for certain events. Joining me is Bob Wright of Formula Race Promotions. And Bob, I've got to say, I love it how you have the Atlantics, but this is a great initiative that you have to start next season.
Well, I thank you for having me on the show. I think we kind of came into this as a result of SCCA Pro Racing effectively allowing the F4 cars to run with us with the Pacific Series and in the in club racing, really as an effort to give the drivers who are either not quite ready to compete in the FIA F4 event, or just those that are competing that want more seat time. So our view on this was to put together a program that allowed them a little bit of competition and a lot of seat time, and a chance, and also a chance to use some of the equipment out there that is not necessarily being used in the FIA championship. We also hope that some of the younger drivers who may not be eligible yet, those would be 14-year-olds who are not eligible yet for the FIA series, to come join us, get some experience, and then transition to the FIA program.
It's a race schedule that's mixed with your series in the SCCA National Championship runoffs. Starts at Mid-Ohio, April 30th through May 2nd. Barber, May 21st through the 23rd. At Pitt Race, June 18th through the 20th. Road America, July 30th through August 1st. Audubon Country Club, September 12th through the 18th. Then it wraps up with the FX class at the SCCA runoffs at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. It's a very diverse schedule, and something that's been well needed, because as you said, there's the West Coast series. Well, there's nothing like that here in the east of the Mississippi, where if you had an F4 car, well, you're either doing private testing, you're running at a private country club, or you're running an FX.
That's very true. The concept of using, of going, of having the our series wrap up at Indy was really Indianapolis Motor Speedway is iconic. It is Mecca, and to be able to have these cars go there, they're eligible. They don't have to go to our series. They, you know, any F4 car can show up at Indy and run in FX as long as they're qualified. One of the things we will provide is some of that qualification. The qualifications to be in the runoffs is you have to run three SCCA majors races, or you can run one majors race and two FRP races, or you can run two majors races and one FRP race. But in any case, it's a way to get qualified. And I think some of these kids would have a great time running at Indy at the runoffs. And as a bonus, one of them may be able to collect a national SCCA national championship in that class.
It's a great initiative, and it gives these kids an eye on the prize to where they could end up someday. The 6-event 11-race series introduces one of the most affordable prices in motorsports, and that's one thing that I constantly hear about your series, Bob, is it's extremely affordable. We've seen how competitive the 1600 series is, race after race, you know, a bunch of those races, if I can remember, under a second between first and second place. But this series, I think, is going to draw some more crowds, not necessarily from those who, you know, are 14 years old, like you said, but those who want to get more seat time in the F4 if they can get it.
I think that's right. But by the way, in the F1600 series, we don't measure by under a second. We often measure by under a tenth of a second.
Yes.
We have to do a photo finish on most of our races because they're so close. And you know, as an aside, 1600 is a wonderful, wonderful training ground. But anyway, I think our goal here is to give people some seat time and give them a place to race in what we hope is green flag racing and, affordable. And, you know, we plan to run the series very much the way we run all of FRP. You know, we're not FIA. We don't have that stringent set of rules that need to be enforced in the FIA series. The goal is to let people race and let them learn.
And is there going to be a separate race for the Pro 4 Challenge, or are they going to be paired up with, you know, like an Atlantics or 2000?
Well, I think in a perfect world, we would have separate races for them. I think a lot of it depends on how many cars we get. You know, if we only have a few cars, then we would probably match them up. If we get enough, we'll run separate. We'll have to see what the participation is going to be. We do have the capability of being pretty flexible.
Now, how busy has your phone been since this announcement with teams wanting to inquire about this new championship?
We have had some inquiries. Mostly by way of text and email rather than phone calls, although I've had a couple of phone calls already. We know we've got some people coming. I think rather than tell people who's coming or who isn't coming, I'll let the teams tell people themselves. We'll let the teams do announcements on what they want to do.
Ooh, I like that. That's a nice little tease there. So we'll have to do our homework, and you might find more in the next segment. And this is great. When you signed on with the tracks, did the ones that were picked for Pro 4, were they aware that, you know, we could have more cars than we normally have with a new series? Or is this one of those, oh, by the way, guys, we're adding a race series to our weekend?
Well, I think a number of the tracks, I'm what's called the renter. So I basically control the weekend, and I control the schedule. On a couple of the events where I am not the renter, I have a certain amount of time I can utilize, and I will fit these cars into those time slots. But it's, you know, of our whole FRP schedule, most of the dates are my dates, so I control it.
And how did the discussion go with SCCA National Office about bringing the F4s over to the runoffs for the championship race?
Well, the SCCA Pro thinks it's a great idea. And I think, you know, I haven't talked to the club yet about it, but, you know, again, it's not something that needs specific permission. If you're going to go to the runoffs, you qualify and you enter. And that's what these cars can do. They are these cars are all eligible in the FX class. And as I said before, they can just show up anytime they want. They don't have to be part of a series. What we're going to do is in sort of our points, our champion, it's not a championship, it's a challenge. Our challenge points, that race will count in our challenge. And that's really are going to be our connection to that race weekend. Other than that, it's going to be run by SCCA Club, as the national championship.
Hoosier tires will be utilized. Also, there will be a tire limit, so it keeps costs down as well. Before we go on to the season review for FRP, if somebody's listening and they have an F4 car, they're interested in running, how can they get a hold of you?
The easiest thing to do is to log on to our main website, which is racefrp.com. And all the contact information for all of the principals are in that website. That's probably the fastest, easiest way to get hold of one of us.
All right. On to the season. It was a truncated season. Obviously, you know, you and I talked before everything went down and then after. It was, I imagine on your end, it was challenging trying to reassign dates, you know, let teams know, work with the local governments, but you pulled the season off, which is fantastic. I think this is one of the seasons that was, if I can remember, especially in 1600, one of the closest seasons we have seen in terms of competition all year round.
The 1600s exemplified close racing. I haven't seen that many finishes that close in a long, long time. I think the fact that we even pulled the season off this year is certainly a testament to my staff and the ability to juggle events and everything else. We managed to, at the end of the day, we managed to get 6 out of the 7 original race venues that we scheduled last fall. The only one we couldn't get to was Barber. We had to cancel it the first time, then rescheduled it, and then had to cancel it again. So we ended up with 6 events instead of 7 for the season, and I think that's the fact that we pulled that off is amazing anyway.
Yeah, exactly, and especially with, you know, everything going on with restrictions. Simon Sykes looked pretty good this season in 1600. Not to rub salt in your wound, Randon Dixon just went out and flat out dominated almost everything. Obviously, you won a race at Summit Point, so congratulations to you.
Thank you. Dixon broke. That's how I won.
Seems to be a theme with people who win a lot this season. They broke. So Atlantic's with a great championship, the F1000s. Are we looking at a growth of FRP into next season?
I certainly hope so. I think we're going to have a pretty strong 1600 class. I think we're going to have a much stronger 2-liter class than we did this year. I know of a number of teams who have bought cars and have drivers lined up to come. So I think F2000 will be good. I've got my fingers crossed that Atlantics will survive, and I think the F1000s will probably be similar to last year.
Prototype Challenge, I know it's a newer championship for you and FRP. Where do you see the trajectory of that?
I'm sorry, I missed that question. Say it again. I'm sorry.
The Prototype Championship, it's a newer class for FRP. Where do you see the trajectory?
That is a work in progress. Let's leave it at that at the moment.
Okay.
It's pretty much a work in progress. It's a very different challenge than anything else we've done. And, we're working on things, but we'll see how it goes.
Solid schedule, 3 new, tracks in FRP. I'm excited for Road America. Personally, I'm excited for Autobahn. I know we will be on site for that, somehow, some way covering that, but, schedule looks great this year. It really does.
Thank you. It was actually fairly difficult to put it together. I think the echo or the fallout from 2020 and people moving around and the, you know, the major events, IndyCar, IMSA, NASCAR, all moving things around, made for a pretty much of a struggle to get a schedule together. And I think certainly all the other series owners that I've talked to, we were all having the same problem doing our scheduling this year. And I think that's maybe why the schedule looks a little different than traditionally because of that.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how everything pulls off. Hopefully everything gets off, you know, normally as the schedule's written, but nonetheless, we'll still follow it here inside Open Wheel. Bob, thanks for joining us and looking forward to seeing what happens down the road.
I thank you very much for having me on, and I can't wait to get racing again.
Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, Charlie and I dissect the news of the week.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Well, we got a lot of news to cover and not a lot of time to cover it. I'm kidding. We still have a lot of time to cover it. Charlie Ante, our driver analyst, joins us. And you had a chance to listen in to Bob Wright, someone who you know because you run in for FRP in the F1600. So let's get your take on this new Pro 4 Challenge.
Yeah, I think it's a smart business move from FRP's perspective. It's, you know, F4 is an incredibly popular series. So it kind of, it helps them, you know, increase their participation, increase their car counts. And I didn't compare schedules, so I don't know for sure, but it looks like they're sort of actively trying to not compete with the SCCA Pro Series. So, you know, it creates an opportunity for these young drivers to get even more seat time. And I know from experience at FRPs, they're about as affordable as pro racing can be. So it's, I don't want to say cheap seat time, but it's accessible seat time. And, you know, I mean, with all the yellow flag running that F4 has been doing in the recent past, these kids can use all the seat time they can get.
Ooh, flow bro, low bro. Okay, so here's what we did take a look at the schedules. The only one I see on paper is the weekend when F4 is at WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca. And the same weekend is when the Pro 4 kicks off at the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course. So there is one combination, but I have to say this. So we know if you've been following motorsports news over the past couple of days, I'm sure you've seen that NASCAR is going to be running their second race of the season at the Daytona International Speedway on the road course, which I applaud. I love that road course for the stock cars, instead of going over to California Speedway. I would not be surprised if the two dates at Sonoma and WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca are wiped out and they put new venues in place for those weekends. But then again, we saw that California was more apt to have sports car races like, you know, IMSA, SVRA at the venues where they would hold them, like Sonoma and WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca, than they were to have, you know, NASCAR or IndyCar. So we're going to see what happens. I also think that the Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach is going to be held in September instead of its normal date. But that's just my guessing.
I'm not sure why they would move it.
Probably just to, you know, alleviate what's been going on with, you know, COVID.
Oh, yeah. I forgot that, I guess... California and especially Los Angeles has been very strict. But I mean, when's the traditional one? It's in like April, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, April's a long way away. Who knows what's going to happen by then.
Exactly. But it's like I told Bob, I like the schedule. I like the racetracks that are there. And I like the idea. Because it gives kids who normally can't run in the FIA series a chance to get used to driving in the same equipment, albeit different shot tires, but also it gives an East Coast F4 championship because we see one on the West Coast as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I didn't even realize that.
Yeah. So, because
I suppose it also creates, I've focused on, you know, increasing seat time for current drivers, but it also gives a chance for maybe lower budget drivers to dip their toes in.
Yeah, we've not reached out to any F4 teams. I'm going to do so over the next week. So next week, our last show of 2020, we will have that information for you, hopefully with teams that decide that what they're going to get that information or not. But it'll be an interesting offseason, we'll say the least. And one thing I do like is the final race of the year for Pro 4 is at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway for the SECA National Championship runoffs.
Yeah, that's cool. I have to confess that I've never gone to the runoffs. I think the main reason is I'm not a huge fan of the format. I mean, you're there for a week. You have one session each day. And so, I mean, it's, you know, it's a week long thing. You're on the track once each day. There's one race. So I don't know. I might go next year as a spectator. I was thinking about that. I might even go as a competitor. Who knows? But yeah, that's the main reason I haven't gone. I think for the money that I spend on it, I'd rather hop the pond and go to the British Formula Ford Festival or something like that.
No, I agree. That either would be interesting. So we'll keep tabs on that and let you know who's going to be running Pro 4 next season. So we have some big news in IndyCar over the past 24 hours. Two driver announcements have been made, both, I think, out of left field. One of those is the 26 car, which we thought would go to James Hinchcliffe, is actually going to go to Colton Herta. So he's going to move from Andretti Steinbrenner over to Andretti Autosport. Now, it's a shame because this is the first time since Colton Herta's come back to the States that he will not be running with Steinbrenner, George Steinbrenner IV. But it opens up a possibility for someone else to get into a race-winning seat. I have a feeling that Hinch is going to be in that seat next year.
That definitely seems like the most obvious choice.
Yeah, and you know, really, any sponsor that sponsors that car is going, the 88 car is going to, they're going to have a great spokesman in James Hinchcliffe. So, George, if you're listening, yeah, Hinch, I will take the residuals after that as well. Also, earlier today, and I tweeted this on our Twitter page at Inside Open Wheel with the words "out of left field." Two-time Indianapolis 500 champion and 1999 kart champion Juan Pablo Montoya returns to McLaren to run the Indianapolis 500 next year, which I think it's a good move and really further proves that Zach Brown has some massive stones to hire one of the best drivers at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
Yeah, I think I made the comment when you told me about this is that he's going to need one hell of an 80s montage to get ready.
Oh yeah, that's very true. Yeah, it is, and I had to think about that for a little bit.
They could get some sponsorship from a lubricant and a shoehorn company. it's just too easy. I know I'm being really mean.
Senior, look at Al Senior when he won his fourth. Look at AJ Foyt when he won his fourth. It's possible.
Yeah, fair enough.
It's very possible, but you know, if there's anyone who could get in a car at IMS and be fast, it's Juan Montoya. Look at how quick he was when he came back after running in Formula One and NASCAR.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. I mean, yeah, it's going to be fun to watch.
I want to see Tony Stewart come back to the 500 now that they've got a windshield.
That would be interesting. Yeah, he's still actively racing on dirt, right?
Yes. Yeah, he's still actively racing on dirt right now. Also, speaking of NASCAR stars, it was Jenna Fryer of the AP talked to Jimmy Johnson. He was testing a DPI at Daytona, and he basically said he's not going to be in the 500 next year, mostly because Tony Kanaan's going to be in that 48 car, but I still think that his family thinks that, you know, racing ovals is dangerous. Yes, it is dangerous. And if he doesn't want to run the 500, in my opinion, that doesn't make him any less of an IndyCar driver. I'm okay with him running just the road course races.
Yeah, I mean, I can totally understand anyone's hesitancy to run on ovals. I think something that still I haven't seen an answer to is the effect of the aero screen, but I guess what I'm really talking about is the sort of the halo that's embedded in the aero screen. The effect that it would have on one of those poles, like the support poles for the fences around the ovals, because if it can cut through one of those poles, then you've just made oval racing so much safer. And I haven't seen any data or anything on that.
I guess that's what we're going to have to do in the offseason, do some digging and see if anybody at Dallara can show us any proof, because I'm interested myself. Because if you take a look at the halo, what it did to Romain Grosjean's hit, I don't know. Did you see? I didn't send it to you because I forgot, basically. But there's a simulation out there somebody did a simulation of Grosjean's crash at turn three.
Was it the illustration?
Yeah, it was almost like a CAD model.
I think I have seen that, yeah.
It's amazing to show what that halo can do at that speed to guardrail. Granted, guardrail's like me running through aluminum foil, but I digress.
Yeah, I'm trying to look for the picture.
I'll have to send it to you off the air. Hold on a second. I should be able to find it. But yeah, I mean, if that... Well, and two, you know, look at... I guess it kind of did get its test at... you know, Iowa, but here it is. I'm going to send this to you over the chat.
Well, but the Iowa crash wasn't a... I mean, the test, I guess the most dangerous of all of them, of all the situations, is a driver going topside into the fence, right? That's where it gets really, really nasty.
Yes.
And it can conceivably be that the halo could cut through the telephone pole, the support structures. I didn't see this.
Yes, I saw that today. So, okay. Watch it off the air, and we'll have a discussion later on next week. Okay. It's a very interesting video, but yeah, I'm curious to see what the numbers are on that. Also, I'm looking at Twitter right now, and I'm just reminded that Donald Davidson announced his retirement earlier yesterday from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And I've got to say this, whoever fills that position's got some massive shoes to fill. We are working on trying to get Donald Davidson on the show for one interview, because I would just love to sit and pick his brain. I mean, I'll be honest. I'll be out and about thinking I should probably get a book on the 500 and start reading on it some more, so I can at least be well-versed and sound, you know, have more history than what I have right now.
I picked up a book about the history of IMSA a few weeks ago, and I've learned a lot from that.
So was it 50-50 pictures, 80-20 pictures? I mean,
it's like 60-40 text, actually.
I will admit to you, you remember when I did IMSA back in the early teens, when I announced for them,
mm-hmm.
I dug up a massive binder of every win that I made. You know, they sent me obviously everything they had because I needed to sound good, but I have, I would say at least a 8-inch thick binder of every driver, every win, every race that was run under the ALMS banner from when it was from its inception to the 2011 Road America race.
Hmm. Well, the book it's less statistics and more sort of the story of how IMSA came to be and how it became not what it is now, but sort of how it grew from creation to into the GTP era.
Okay.
And I had no idea that NASCAR was so so involved in the formation of IMSA.
Yep. It's amazing how Bill France Jr. was a big part of IMSA in its early days with mm-hmm. the Bishops. So that I do find interesting, and how the Frances love sports car racing. Take a look at Jim France. I've had the chance to talk to him, obviously, my previous life as a sports car analyst, and one of the nicest men you could ever meet. And NASCAR is in great hands with Jim France. Yes, I said the N-word, and how they're in good hands. Everybody calm down. It's okay. I haven't lost my mind completely.
Does he know that it's not a stick and ball sport? Because I've been questioning that recently.
Well, I don't ask these questions anymore. It could be worse. It could be, it could be the fact that stick and ball sports aren't doing too well. Looking at you, baseball and the Chicago Cubs.
Well, it could be worse. I mean, they could throw a ball out on the track and have the drivers push it around. They're pretty much there. They've got playoffs. They've got quarters. They've got halftime. They've got, what don't they have?
They're trying to attract the short track crowd. Come on. Come on. Also making news this week, Formula 4, we have another driver. It is Team Crosslink has promoted Ryan Sheehan to F4 United States Championship, powered by Honda. Sheehan will also be running some kart races with Crosslink. And I think back to some of the other teams that are, you know, they have what they like to call driver development programs. And personally, I think that, you know, Crosslink is one of the best out there because they literally have everything from karting, and they can even get you into FR Americas. So, it's a great jump to just grow with one team. And then when it's time, go to, USF 2000 Indy Lights or whatever.
These cars are similar enough that the only real difference between like a Pro 2000 team and an F4 team is the car, really.
Yeah.
You could take an F4 team and buy a Pro 2000 car and send it to them and say, hey, let's go Pro 2000 racing next year. And they'd be like, okay, and make very minimal changes and probably be as competitive in that series as they were in the previous one.
Oh, yeah, but the airbox on the side too.
Yeah, they're all minor differences. So stands out is sort of the size, because if you have more series, you need more employees, bigger shop, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know knowledge I'm contributing with this rambling, but there it is.
Here we go. All right, go ahead with your rambling. I'll just have my almonds.
I'm done for now.
For now. All right. So next week, it's going to be interesting to see what news is top, because I just cannot believe how much news we've had this week. This is just nuts. But don't get me wrong, this is all good news. I'm wondering, though, if we're going to hear more about Long Beach and what's going to happen next year. And I've said this enough. There's nothing against the Holman George family, but I think the IndyCar is in fantastic hands with Roger Penske at the helm. I really do.
Yeah, I think you're being a little more generous. I mean, I don't know.
The pessimist Charlie Ante, why don't you go on Crap Wagon and just post something?
the thing is, I am as probably more at this point more interested in sort of the business aspects of motorsport as I am the actual making a car go fast. So people that were around during the split are probably sick of it, but I love talking about it. I could talk about it for weeks.
I am waiting for somebody to write a book on the split.
There is a book on the split. I have it somewhere. I'll try to dig it up later when we're done. It's not the best book in the world. In terms of where biases go, it leans sort of towards the pro USAC bias, but not a whole lot. I'm sort of on the opposite side of that, but there's plenty of blame to go around.
Oh yeah. You know who would be a good person to write about the split? John Oriovitz.
Mm-hmm.
I think he would be a fantastic, because he covered both of them. So, I mean, why not? So, all right, that's enough, I think, for news and notes for this week. Coming up next, Coach Rod Reed of Force Indy is sitting down with us. You'll definitely want to listen into this interview. We go into depth about how Force Indy came about next on Inside Open Wheel.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Well, for the past couple of months, we've been talking about the drive for diversity on Inside Open Wheel, how Roger Penske's been trying to get that forward. And we've talked to Willie T. Ribbs, and there's only been one IndyCar team owner. His name is Dr. Jim Logan. He's someone that I know through a friend, someone who I highly respect as well. And this owner, as well, is trying to become the next IndyCar, African-American IndyCar owner. It is Coach Rod Reed, a Force Indy. And Coach, I have to say, welcome to the fraternity of ownership within the IndyCar banner.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be here.
Let's go ahead and talk. We'll talk about Force Indy, how it all got started beforehand. But let's start on where you came from initially. It's an interesting story, to say the least.
Okay. Well, I can go all the way back to my teen years, growing up in Indianapolis and in the shadow of the 500, actually living not that far, close enough where I could actually hear their engines roar. My family wasn't very much involved in motorsports and interested in it. But I was curious and always wanted to go, so we'd listen to it on the radio. And I loved the excitement of it. And so at the age of about 17, I decided that I wanted to go to the show, and one way to do it was to become a yellow shirt. You know, the guys that are out there, you know, picking up trash and doing security. So I did that, and I absolutely loved it. I thought it was the greatest thing in the world. So I got a chance to stand and peer and watch the show. And so I guess you could say I kind of got the racing bug, and I could go back to when I was really, really little and, you know, would draw cars, slot cars, model cars, et cetera. But, as I got into, my, older early 20s, if you will, I found myself working with an ad agency that had been approached by a young man named Charles Wilson, and he was trying to get into African-American. He was trying to get into open wheel racing, which I knew quite a bit about because I had, you know, read and followed. And he solicited my help in seeking sponsorship. So that's what I did early on, was to kind of beat the pavement and try to raise funds. And I learned a tremendous amount of the difficulty in motorsports to get the awareness of those lower levels of the sport. And we eventually got an opportunity to go out to California, and I became sort of his PR guy. But in 1984, we had a chance to start our own team. And when I say start a team, I raised the money. Then we decided to go buy the equipment we needed or rent from a team. And we contested Formula Mazda and went on to get where we got our quote unquote big money. And that is when I was able to get sponsorship from Budweiser. And this was in 1985. Budweiser at the time was running Willie T. Ribbs. You mentioned him, as well as a few other. Actually, Budweiser had a lot of teams. Bobby Ray Hall was running for IndyCar, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I got a great education from being a part of that, and I was always a behind-the-scenes guy. So that was my entree to what is now, I guess, full team ownership. But we did that, and as we moved from Super V at the time to stepping into testing IndyCars is where we ran into our biggest challenge. And that challenge, and I will tell you, when you talk to Willie, we are there's no shortage of people being challenged in this sport, either because of racism or because of just the whole notion of maybe not having the money or not being in the inner circle. And so we were kind of victims of that as well. And we tested IndyCar in 1988. Charles was poised to be probably, along with Willie, he might have been to the 500 first. We had gotten some money, but we really, you know, really got hurt in a deal that went sour. And that soured our attitude towards the sport for a number of years, to actually a benefit. And that was, we were saying in the early 90s, we did not want another black kid, you know, girl or boy, to have to deal with some of the issues we dealt with. So we chose to go the route of, let's do something to help the sport become better. And that's why we created Next Gen Racers. And we were thinking for the next generation of racers, where that came from. And what we did was we started a team. We bought a stock car. We were going to put kids in it. And we ended up having some challenges because we realized that the kids we were trying to work with had no foundation. So thus, we started NXG Youth Motorsports and got go-karts, bought all the assets, and said that we would start to teach kids all about racing. So it's a long story there, but getting to the point where in 2006, we had our first academy with kids. And then after that, here I am, you know, 15 years later, my partner passed away in 2011. And we've had, you know, over 2,000 kids in the program, 216 classes, and been operating out of the Speedway since 2006. And raised the funds, sponsorship, et cetera, thanks to folks like Lucas Oil and others, to get us to a point where when Roger Penske, you know, bought the Speedway, he became aware of us. So that's kind of the backstory before, you know, before I presented the notion of Force Indy to him.
And the programs, as you said, the Lucas Oil NXG Motorsports Academy focuses heavily on STEM. You have the NXG Grand Prix. It's a whole championship series and the Path to Pro. It looks like a very successful program. Now, how many of these children or students that you have in the program, do they end up finding jobs, you know, not necessarily with IndyCar, but somewhere in the motorsports world?
Ah, great, great question. I tell you, we have had every class a little session on motorsports and motorsports related careers. And the biggest hurdle is that we are not able, and hadn't in the past, we weren't able to have like IndyCar teams and others in motorsports either come out and talk to the kids or give us an opportunity to kind of like go through their shop and have them encourage the kids. Now, trust me, I understand that they're super busy and that the times that we've during the season when we've solicited their support, you know, they're super, super busy. But the one thing I will say, and this may sound a little controversial, but football, basketball, I believe baseball does it, soccer, they all have community outreach programs, and where you will see, you know, one of the athletes come out and they'll go to a local community center or they'll work with kids. They'll do maybe a cleanup, fix up program, but they have some connection in the community. Motorsports as a whole, I'm not saying that there haven't been efforts to that effect, but as a whole, they tend not to do it as a group or a series or an entity to say, we want those athletes, those race car drivers to go out to the community and make sure that they connect with them. A lot of them don't live in the same place. It's a different kind of a team arrangement. It's not like a football team with, you know, 30, 40 plus personnel. But I still think that's one thing that's made it, there's been a disconnect and made it a more difficult for, as you asked, you know, for some of these kids to see themselves in a career, regardless of whether it was, you know, selling, you know, being a ticket person or working in the office in PR or communications. We've encouraged it, but it's very difficult to get them to transition from our classroom to where they can actually see someone in the business.
Talking with Coach Rod Reed of Force Indy, and, you know, you're talking about some of the business, and my first thought, you may know this person, goes to my friend Joe Griffin, and how he's come from, you know, where he's at now is lead tech from, used to be lead tech over with the Atlantic Championship, but still works with Atlantics. And it just, even to this day, you know, it amazes me how, yeah, there's no true outreach. And what you're doing is, you know, helping these kids move forward and at least give them an opportunity to say, hey, you know what, you want to do this? You can do this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that you have, at least for me, it's, you know, I've got someone who looks like me. And sometimes people, they hear that and they go, oh, yeah, yeah, sure. But I think there's, it's so important. I think back when I was young, you know, I studied engineering, architecture engineering. And I actually interviewed an architect that happened to be African-American when I was in high school. That did wonders my idea and vision of that I could do it. And we always think about the race car driver, but man, why don't we have more, you know, team owners, car owners, and so forth. I will give you a sidebar. You mentioned Doc Logan, great guy, beautiful story, but he wasn't the first. He wasn't the only. I mean, you know, we look at it in modern times with the 500, but I think about all those guys. You may have heard me talk about Ray Joe Jack or Charlie Wiggins in the 20s and 30s. They were team owners. They were team drivers. They just were not allowed in the 500 and at the higher level of what the AAA was sanctioning. And that's the part I think sometimes gets missed. I have people ask me all the time about, well, you know, what is this whole thing about, you know, inclusion and blacks? Nobody's keeping blacks out of the sport. And I said, you know, you've got to go back in history and you have to look at why we are where we are today. And it's not any one person saying, no, you guys can't come in, but it has been systemic throughout from the beginning. And until you have someone like a Roger Penske and the leadership in motorsports opening the door and saying, you know what, we want to welcome you in. That's a big difference. And that's why I think, you know, what we're doing today is going to be much more sustainable.
All right. I want to talk about Force Indy, but we got to take a quick break. Coming up next, Coach Reed and I will dissect into Force Indy, how the conversation with Roger Penske started. We went a little bit into it, but I want to go deeper into that next on Inside Open Wheel.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
With Coach Rod Reed of Force Indy, we went into a little bit of history on how we got to today. Now, earlier this year, Roger Penske said he wanted to drive for diversity, said that in a press conference. And I want to talk to you, Coach Reed, about where that started, because you said that once Roger Penske took over the Speedway, that's when everything started to develop between you and Mr. Penske. So where did it start? And then how did we get to where we are today?
Well, yeah, I had been spending the last 14 years, starting in September of 06, as I mentioned, being allowed to be at the Speedway with our program. And these were primarily weekend activities with the kids, primarily 11 to 16 year olds, with the programs that we have. You mentioned them earlier, both our Academy Grand Prix series, and then most recently we did the Path to Pro program. And it, you know, honestly, it was, I like to say in a nice way, but the truth is, you know, we were certainly allowed to be there, and they would somewhat embrace what we were doing. But I always felt like it was a two-way street that could be put into place, where I'm bringing the black community into the Speedway, and maybe the Speedway now has a way to get to the black community. But it really didn't gel that way. We still had parents who came into the track who really didn't understand where they were. I mean, some of them would actually say to me, well, where's the track? Because, you know, that place is huge. And so I would say, hey, let me take you around the track. And maybe we would go over to the museum and give them an opportunity to go around it. And they were always excited and always wanted to come back, understand what was going on there. But not very many people who live within a mile or 2 mile radius of the track felt like that they were welcome. And I talked to Roger Penske about that when he asked me about the program, and that had a really great impact on him, because he said, why would they think they can't come in? And I said, well, let me give you the picture here. We have this huge facility, it's surrounded by a fence, and when you come in, there's a guard station, and places like that tend to tell you, well, you can't go past this point without, quote unquote, an appointment or a ticket or something. And I'm not really sure why I'm here to get a ticket, because I'm not sure about the activities that go on here. I've had kids that say, I heard their engines, but I just didn't think they let us in there. So it's really went from there that I think there was some intrigue about the story of, you know, these families and folks that lived in the community that just saw the event as an opportunity to maybe have people park their cars in their yards for, you know, 10 or 12 bucks, but really didn't see it as an event that they would want to be a part of. So we talked about how NXG Youth Motorsports actually invited the community in. And he really liked that. And he said to me, you know, well, we actually have been partners, but we haven't done a very good job of that partnership. And I agreed. I said, you know, I think there can be a much greater benefit to motorsports and IMS in particular and IndyCar if we start to do things where we bring the community in a more meaningful way. So that's what started the discussion. We talked about how this, you know, Race for Equality and Change program that he had considered might be fulfilled partially with both programs and procurement and hiring. And he said, you know, programs like yours. And I said, hey, I appreciate that. And I think we can become stronger partners. And that's how we started. They've given us garage space there, which is great. And I don't know if I mentioned, but NXG Youth Motorsports is a not-for-profit 501c3 organization. So a lot of opportunity for that sort of, you know, philanthropic support. And so we're working now on also looking at our equipment and other ways that we can bolster that organization. But he did ask me, you know, what was kind of my dream and some of the things that we were wanting to do. And I said, you know, we started off with a race team, and I would love to see an effort that is led by African Americans in the 500. And he said that was his vision too. He said, I'd love to see a black driver and owners and so forth at the IndyCar level. And I said, you know what? The only way we're going to get there, we've already had the taking nothing away from Willie and George Mack. We've had the first, second black driver. I'm sidebar. I'm a little disappointed that we have, you know, gone this long and we've only had two that have run 500 and only one who's really done the series. But I said, you know, we've got to get mechanics and we've got to get people in the office. And I call it the cockpit, the pit, the paddock, the office, and the garage. We need to have folks in all of those positions and in those places. And if we think that way, I think we can do something that's going to actually have a significant change in the sport, because people will see themselves having an opportunity. I will say, and you already know this full well, Jeremy, that, you know, when you're a race car driver, especially at the lower levels, you got to pay to play. When you start thinking about maybe some of these other positions, you get paid. You're looked at as a skilled hire. And I think there's a lot of skilled individuals that happen to be of color that have not had that opportunity. And I think motorsports has lost out. I truly do. So that's part of the change that we're about.
And I don't disagree with that 100%. I've worked, you know, as we talked off the air, I've worked in, you know, support series for years. And, you know, especially in the club racing, you do see some minority drivers, you see some minority teams, but you don't see them move up. And it could be because of funding or other things. But one thing that I really love about your Force Indy program, you have all people across the spectrum working, you know, behind the scenes as the crew. So it's not just the driver that is going to be, you know, a part of diversity. It's going to be the whole crew.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've got the crew and then what I call staff. And then, you know, I'm putting my so-called money where my mouth is. We've, you know, we've hired a PR firm that is led by African-American female. We start to look at all of our procurement and saying, you know, how can we consider, you know, people of color just as a point, I mean, you know, we're certainly aren't exclusive. And some folks have asked me, you know, aren't you just, isn't this just reverse discrimination? And I said, you know, if you stop and think about it, if we don't do it, how's it going to change? Because these teams, these IndyCar teams, rightfully so, they're not going to hire somebody who's never done this stuff before. I mean, that's just common sense. So if I can actually teach folks and have them gain some expertise, gain some skill, and use the talent they have, I think these teams will see it. That's another thing that I think is unique about Force Indy. We are going to grow and hopefully demonstrate that we have the capability and the ability to perform well. And then maybe those guys, I mean, I love the folks that I've brought into the program, but if in another year or two or three, somebody says, you know what, I want to hire that person from you, I'm going to see that as a success, not as a, you know, necessarily a bad thing.
And is this going to be a one-car team this year with possible expansion into a two-car team next in 2022, possibly?
Yeah, you know, we really wanted to do a two-car team. I think that's kind of a no-brainer when it comes to all the expenses that you have to have and the assets that you have when you pull together a team. You certainly can amortize out over a couple of cars. I think the thing that makes a difference here is for us is that we know that the car is going to change for next year. I mean, you've probably followed, you know, USF 2000 and as well as the Indy Pro 2000. And the Indy Pro has the halo and the Pro 2000 does not. And I think in 2022, we're going to add the halo. And we certainly know from F1 and other races that that halo makes a huge difference. So I didn't want to invest in the equipment that we couldn't use, you know, more than one season. So I was hesitant to, you know, get another car and then try to compete with you know, another driver and another set of mechanics and so forth. But that's the goal, you know, whether it's two cars or three cars, that's certainly in my vision.
Where are you at in the driver search so far this year? Are we close to an announcement, still in the development stages?
We are really close. I think we've got, you know, we're going to do some more testing this winter. We've got, I'm, you know, kind of in a way narrowed it down to a very, very short number of drivers. And the one that will be selected is just the first one. It's not, oh, he was chosen because he's better or anything like that. It's just going to be the first driver. And then we will continue. So I'm hoping to have really three that are very specific in mind to what degree I'm going to be able to have them practice or be a part of the team initially. I don't know. But we definitely are close. And I hope to have that announcement, you know, pretty soon. And whether it's going to happen this year, we're still going to do some testing and we'll be testing with a couple of drivers, I believe. We will certainly, you know, I'm thinking in January for sure.
Now, with it being a relatively fresh team, obviously, you know, you have a blank set of notes. Have you been talking to other teams or has Roger Penske helped you out with, you know, maybe set up notes, what each track's like from an IndyCar perspective, but something you can use as base notes?
Yeah. You know, we are really working on that right now, trying to see if we can't, you know, learn a lot more. Obviously, you know, the Penske organization, they're at the highest levels of the sport. And, you know, they've been very gracious to say, hey, you know, let's take a look at the lower level here, this first rung of the Road to Indy. They've got so much wealth of experience that they can bring. Now, it's not exactly with this car and with this series, but I think we can benefit from their process and the approach that they take to racing. As it relates to working with other teams, as you know, racing is a pretty tight-knit community, which is one of the reasons why it's it's been so exclusive. I'm hoping that when we come in, you know, we certainly want to be, we want to be viewed as competition, because we will be. But I'm hoping that, you know, the things that can be and would typically be shared might be, you know, no trade secrets or, you know, the secret sauce for winning. But if we can, you know, be good partners and good competitors where the team next to us says, you know, hey, you know, you take a look at this is what I'm doing here on this track, you know, or what have you. I think some of that happens. And if it does, it'll be great.
Well, and you have a great mentor in the Penske organization as well, John Buslog, going to help out with the efforts. So that right now, that just sets you on the right foot forward for next season.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's been great. We've had a chance to be down there. As you know, we didn't, you know, we wanted to wait to announce when we had everything gel. But our guys have been down in North Carolina for over a month, working on the car and trying to learn and understand. And he's just a wonderful mentor, and I think kind of gets what we're trying to do. And we're excited about that.
One final question: do you see Force Indy making its way to IndyCar in 3-4 years' time?
You know. I have two goals. The first is to have what I would consider a successful season. And that success is going to be measured in how well we perform as a team. Certainly in racing, you're looking to put the car up front. We want to do that. I'm a fierce competitor. I've always been that way. And when I ran track and field, and same with racing. But I want to have measured expectations. We've got a lot to learn. I don't, you know, have any illusions about what it's going to take to be successful. But that's my first thing, is to make sure that when you give me a call and say, hey, let's have an interview, and it's in, you know, this coming August or September, that I can say to you, you know what, Jeremy, we did the best we could do with what we had. And that's my goal. As far as the next few years, we would like to continue up the ladder. And that's going to be dependent on both in the cockpit and out of the cockpit. So if we are able to have, you know, our driver show the promise and our team show the promise, then, you know, we'll keep climbing the ladder. So, you know, we're not that far away. You know, we've got hopefully, you know, Indy Pro, Indy Lights. And then we're there. So there's no question that I would love to be a part of the IndyCar in the top level of motorsports. And that's what we're going for. That's what we're going for.
Well, I've got to say this. I had a chance to see the car, you know, pictures in Victory Lane. It is, I'm not trying to be biased or anything, but it's one of the best looking paint schemes. We'll be on the grid next season.
I hope so. well, one thing, Jeremy, first of all, I appreciate you saying this. I got to take a cheap shot and give a shout out to RLR Associates, which is my branding company. No, the guys, the designers there have just done a fabulous job of something that they know have been around as long as I've been around. We have, my branding company is 26 years old. So I think we know how to do it. But the biggest thing is, you know, I was going to say to you, now, I'm not really sure what it's going to look like, because we're still trying to figure out who our sponsor is going to be. But I can guarantee you, if the sponsor allows us to be a bit creative, we will be the best looking car on the grid.
Yeah, I don't disagree. It looks really good. Coach Reed, thank you so much. And once we get a driver, let's definitely have you guys back on, because this is going to be a team to watch here in the next couple of years.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to that. And let me know, and I'll be more than happy to talk to you.
Sounds good. Coming up next, we continue with the road to Indy Slant. Our two favorite Canadians, Rob Howden and Steve Wittich, join us. We'll talk about this and other things here on Inside Open Wheel.
Now, not everybody, but you know, hey, you know racing, Jerry.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Well, it's that time of the show. It is the Road to Indy wrap-up. It's been an eventful season in the 2020 Road to Indy season. Hold on a second. Hold on. Okay, let's see. Rob's texting me. Jeremy, Steve and I will not be able to make it. We're doing Canadian things. We'll be back next week. All right, well. So, now I've got to try and fill 15 minutes worth of time. Charlie's off doing whatever. Let's see here. Oh, wait a second. Hold on. We're getting a call on the Google Voice hotline, 815-714-9260 is the number. And caller, you're on the air. Welcome to Inside Open Wheel. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, who's this calling in?
Wait, sorry, hold on. Sorry, you keep breaking up.
Well, you know what? That's the joy of technology. Who's this calling in to Inside Open Wheel?
This is Colton Herta.
Colton Herta joining us at Inside Open Wheel. The new driver, the number 26 Gainbridge Honda for Andretti Autosport, three-time IndyCar winner. You know, you've dealt with Rob Howden before, and I think you've also dealt with Steve. So is this any surprise to you that Rob would just say, hey, whatever, I'm not going to deal with you?
It's a surprise to me a bit, yeah. I think Rob's always been a good friend of mine, so I'm surprised he bailed on us.
Now, Rob will join us next week along with Steve. He had some prior commitments that actually came up, so we'll do our road to Indy, but we're thankful that Colton's joining us this week. First of all, congratulations. This is a huge step for you because you've really proved your worth in the Andretti Steinbrenner car, winning three times, all from the pole. And now you get to run with the big team, Andretti Autosport. So what does this mean for you?
It's huge. I'm obviously very thankful to Michael and the whole Andretti organization for doing this for me. But, it's obviously a very exciting time for me going into next year. And obviously having a big sponsor behind me means a lot. So I'm really thankful for it. And obviously I'm really excited to kind of be in this position.
And you're still within the organization, but you mentioned the sponsor, Gainbridge. They've made a big investment to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and the Indianapolis 500.
Absolutely, yeah.
So they want to be a part of this sport. Have you been able to talk to the higher-ups over at Gainbridge, and what has been their, their reaction to you stepping into the car full-time?
I had the opportunity to be able to talk to Dan Towers last year. I met him for the first time, who's the CEO of Group 1001 and Gainbridge. So, I've known Dan for a little bit now. Haven't spoken too much, but you know, just hello there, hello here. And so, obviously, like you said, they're so committed to IndyCar. They sponsor the Indy 500. They sponsor the Indianapolis Motor Speedway this year. And then they invested a lot of financial resources into Andretti, too. So, it's a great partnership. It's obviously super exciting to see somebody that's so involved in IndyCar racing and wants to help IndyCar so much. So it's going to be a big task this year trying to give as much exposure to them and try to win as many races for them.
Now, at what point did Michael Andretti come to you with an offer to jump into the 26 car?
I think late last year it was kind of being bounced around as an idea. And so I remember maybe like around St. Pete, maybe a little bit before St. Pete, we talked about it. So, I was kind of understanding of what was going on. In the end, you know, it's obviously their decision on where I end up and drive and who I'm driving for. So, that was kind of the deal with that. But, obviously, like I said before, it's a really exciting time for me and the team. And we have so much momentum to go forward, and I'm really excited to just get the season going.
Colton Herta, driver of the number 26 Gainbridge Honda next season in the NTT IndyCar Series, joins us on Inside Open Wheel. And this is going to be the first season since you came back to the States that you're not going to be running with George Steinbrenner. What is that going to be like?
Obviously it's a little bittersweet, right? Like I had to do this. But, that meant that George wasn't going to be involved in the program. So it's awesome what they've done, what the whole Steinbrenner family has done for me in my short IndyCar career, and what they've done for getting me to IndyCar and getting me in a stable position in IndyCar. So I obviously have a lot of respect for them, and they are the biggest reason why I am in IndyCar today. So I'm sure that this is not the bookend of the situation with me and George. I'm sure the relationship's going on. We're still really good friends, and hopefully we can continue to grow that. And so I think it's definitely not over. It's just a little bit of a bumpy road at the moment until we get back together.
One thing that I find interesting about your career here in the NTT IndyCar Series, almost any time you win a pole, you won the race. COTA, pole, you won the race. Laguna Seca, pole, win the race. Mid-Ohio 2, pole, win the race. I mean, obviously, you're starting up front with the pole, but what is it about winning the pole? And, you know, I guess we luck it. It's more of a, you know, I'm up near the front.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I think it's just a lot easier, right? There's a lot less stress when you can start from the pole instead of starting from the back and having to worry about passing a whole bunch of guys. And we've just had such good cars in qualifying that it helps that much more, to the point where you're not really stressing too much. It's definitely a lot easier, like I said, and it takes a lot of stress out of having to get to the lead at the start of the race. The car's just been so freaking good in qualifying that it's hard not to stick it on the pole sometimes.
Let's talk about your season. You actually had a really good season. Outside of the two IO races in St. Petersburg, you hardly finished outside the top 10. But this season, it seems like you finally came onto your own, was able to click with the equipment. So what was it that, you know, going from no windshield to windshield helped you? Was it more of a understanding of the mechanical engineering of the car now that you had a little bit heavier weight on it?
I think it was more just experience, to be honest. Okay. I think coming out of the rookie season, I did make quite a few mistakes. So it was kind of just a compound of that, having a little bit more experience. Obviously, the driving style was a little bit different. So I think everybody kind of reset a little bit in the way and how they drove the IndyCar. So that also helped. But, you know, I think the biggest thing was just the lack of experience that I had my first season, and that I was able to, you know, go on top of that for the next season.
Before the news came out, at the end of this, you know, your news came out that you're in the 26 car. Near the end of the season, there were rumblings about you possibly jumping into Formula One. How much of that was true? And obviously being, you know, still of age to be able to get into a Formula One ride here in 3-4 years, is that still on your radar?
I think it would be awesome to be able to be in Formula One. How realistic it is at the moment, I'm not sure. It's always been on the radar. To kind of be able to race at that level would be amazing, and something a little different than IndyCar. I think whatever would happen, I'd be happy doing either or. I'd love to race in Formula One. I'd love to have the chance to, but it doesn't take anything away from IndyCar racing for me. That's kind of where I grew up, and that's what I love. So I don't see one as better than the other. I just see them as two completely different disciplines.
And this season, you've also been the endurance driver for BMW North America in IMSA. Done quite well for yourself there as well.
We had a good run, and obviously that program was awesome to be a part of and continue to be a part of. So, obviously I'm very grateful for that. And we had, you know, obviously the Daytona 24-hour win my first year with them was amazing. And then a little bit of a stagnant year this year. I think we had really good possibilities to win in a lot of places, but just had a lot of bad luck and some misfortune. So, but obviously, again, like I said, it's a great opportunity. And obviously IMSA racing is so awesome, and sports car racing in America is so awesome. There's so many great events that it's hard not to want to do.
Yeah, we're real lucky here in the States to have such great racing, whether it's open wheel. And with you growing up in the, you know, kart and IRL paddocks, you know, I correct me if I'm wrong, but I think right now we have probably the deepest field we have seen in American open wheel racing in probably 20, 30 years.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing for me was like it just smoothed out my transition to working with Andretti. And obviously the sport's changed so much, but the core group of guys that have stayed with Andretti It's pretty much similar. So I have a lot of guys that are working on my car that used to work on my dad's car, which is amazing. And obviously the sport's changed so much, and you know, it's different in its own way. But, you know, I think just really fortunate to be in the position I am to just still get to go IndyCar racing.
Your dad, you know, with your dad being on another pit box within the same team, it's got to be helpful to go to him and say, you know, hey, I'm feeling this, you know, what can I do to fix this?
Yeah, no, I think he's still very much in with helping me out. And obviously he's very much dad. So, you know, he helps me out a bunch with a lot of things, you know, and it does help that he's on the team too, because we're talking about the same setup changes most of the time. And, he's always very, you know, very encouraging for me and always helps me out when I need it. So, and I never feel like he's trying to beat me and be on Marco's team more than he is trying to help me. So, yeah, he's been great.
And I've got to say this, you know, you guys, it seems like the whole Andretti Autosport team, it's a close-knit family, always has been. So to stay within the team for next season and for the foreseeable future, it's got to feel good for your career knowing you're with a team that's at the front.
No, yeah, it's definitely a big confidence boost. Obviously, I still only have a one-year contract this year, so I'm out of a contract at the end of the year. But, you know, it's a big year for me, and coming off another big year, it's really important for me to make a championship run, and that'll kind of solidify myself for a while, and hopefully I can sign a bigger deal for a longer period of time. So, yeah, but I mean, like you said, like, it's important to kind of get stuck in on this year, because I think this is going to be a big year for me. And obviously I have the support now. I have the huge backing from sponsorship and I have a great team around me. So I'm really looking forward to it.
I think it's going to be a fun season, because we're seeing a lot of talent come into the NTT IndyCar series. Congratulations on the ride, and look forward to seeing you next season.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for the call.
Thanks for calling as well. Colton Herta, the driver of the number 26 Gainbridge Honda in the NTT IndyCar Series. Next week, for sure, I promise you, Rob Howden and Steve Wittich will be joining us. We'll have our Road to Indy wrap-up and a bunch of other things. Don't forget, at Inside Open Wheel on Facebook and Twitter, that's where you can find all the news that you need to know. I'm Jeremy Scott. So we'll see you next week.